This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
Phil Kirpin is the president of American Commitment. And Phil, welcome back to the show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rich.
How's life in the swamp?
You know, swampy. Other than that, it's all right.
Swampy. And how are your Mets doing?
Well, you know, they got swept by the Marlins and had lost five in a row. And then they won four in a row at home against Washington. So now we're all riding high. They're only one game under 500, which somehow feels good. I think they're 4.5 games back of Philly. So, you know.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. What was that part? Wait, what was that last part?
4.5 games back. It could be worse. We'll see.
Behind what team, Phil?
Your first place Philadelphia.
Okay, I was just checking. I could the line is a little static there. I just wanted to check on that. So you know, I loved your recent editorial here, op-ed. Let electric vehicle subsidies die, and I agree. Let's stick a fork in them, huh?
It would be nice. I mean, this is it's one of these rare situations where a government program was actually designed to end, and it's in a phase-out period right now for the two largest manufacturers of electric vehicles, General Motors and Tesla, because when they passed this thing back in 2007, they said every manufacturer gets to sell 200,000 vehicles with the full $7,500 tax credit, and then they'll get cut in half for 6 months and cut in half again to a quarter of the original amount for 6 months. And then it'll be gone. And so GM and Tesla, right now the credit is $3,750. They're in that first part of the phase out. And all Congress has to do to actually let this program end is do nothing, which is sort of their specialty. So you might think maybe it'll actually happen. On the other hand, you know, they've already introduced legislation to lift the cap, and it's getting bipartisan support, and they'll probably try to stick it on some unrelated giant bill and slip it past that way. And so we're going to watch and try to stop this from being extended. But we got a pretty decent chance, I think, of actually ending this program, because it's a rare situation in which, you know, a government program had a built-in phase-out. So all we need to do is protect it and let it happen.
Yeah, it's not often that these things sunset like this. Usually they're there forever and you got to try to kill them. Now, if it does pass the House, what are your prospects in the Senate, you think? Like,
well,
if they tried to renew it, in other words.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a tricky issue, because I think if they voted on it by itself, it probably wouldn't pass. And even if it did, the president might veto it. But, you know, they're not going to do this by itself. They're going to do a giant tax extenders package that they might slip it into, or one of those giant year-end spending bills to fund the government that they put everything in like a Christmas tree. And if they do it that way, it would be very hard to stop. And so that's the big question, is, you know, what might this become attached to? And you know, I worry this is the kind of thing that could pass, because, you know, there's a tremendous amount of corporate lobbying in favor of lifting the cap. Not just the automakers, of course, who want to keep the money flowing, but all the electric utilities who see this as a way to increase sales if there are more electric vehicles out there, and a bunch of other industry groups. And then you've got kind of the whole environmental left that loves this, even though electric vehicles don't actually reduce pollution relative to internal combustion vehicles on almost every type of pollution other than greenhouse gases, they actually make worse because of how clean modern vehicles are. There was a study last year by the Manhattan Institute that found that switching to electric vehicles will increase SO2, NOx, particulate matter. It slightly decreases greenhouse gas, but that's it. It increases everything else. And, you know, I would hope that given the state of play on trade and resource security issues, that somebody would stand up and say, look, you know, we originally did this 12 years ago because we were worried about being dependent on foreign oil. Now we're a massive exporter of oil. And now the opposite rationale is true. If we switch to electric vehicles, we're dependent on foreign cobalt and foreign neodymium for the magnets for the motors, and you know, all these other rare earth elements, most of which the production is controlled by China. So the geostrategy of this is sort of the opposite of what it was when the program was first put in.
It's an excellent point. Phil Kirpin is here. He's president of American Commitment, and his latest op-ed, Let Electric Vehicle Subsidies Die on Schedule. That point you made is excellent. I have another question, too, that I've always wondered. With all of these batteries in these cars, what happens when the lifeline, you know, the battery's life has just expired? Where do they go? Do they just throw them in landfills or what?
Well, you can't put them in a regular landfill. It's considered hazardous waste, and so there's a whole industry that supposedly recycles them. I don't know exactly, you know, how that process works, but I know that with the electric vehicles, we're going to be looking at a scale we really haven't seen before. I mean, we've typically seen small ones from cell phones and that kind of thing, and there's a whole industry that's sort of grown up around how to recycle those. You know, I assume there'll be some kind of a recycling industry around, you know, the giant packs from the electric vehicles. And I think that, you know, Tesla, for instance, themselves, they've said they're going to do the recycling for their spent batteries. So, you know, I think that's going to be a challenge, though, because, I mean, the scope and scale of it's going to be a lot more. There's going to be a lot more material than what we've seen before in terms of, you know, lithium ion battery recycling. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see if they can recover all the materials and reuse them or not, or if they end up being, you know, resold in the third world, as we've seen with a lot of these spent solar panels that people think are getting recycled are really just being re-exported. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, in theory, they would be recycled, but I think there are going to be some scope and scale challenges with that.
It's just something nobody ever talks about, you know, the actual fuel source of it, the battery itself. And the $7,500 tax credit, which is already in the phase-out period for Tesla and GM, and now the lobbying effort that's underway right now. Where does it stand, Phil, with the modern car of today in terms of fuel efficiency? I know that if, you know, the Green New Deal had their way, it would have to be like 100 miles to the gallon or something crazy like that. But how are cars doing, the kind of cars that we put gas into these days? Are they more fuel efficient than they have been? Are they cleaner than they have been? What's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't been in a modern car lately, go test drive one, because these things are like airplane cockpits. Now they got all kinds of crazy advanced features. They won't let you drift out of your lane if you want to, and they typically get very high fuel mileage, and the emissions out of the tailpipe are extraordinarily clean. And so we've made huge strides in safety technology and in environmental technology, and the new vehicles now are extremely clean and extremely safe. And, there's carbon dioxide coming out of the tailpipe. So if your concern is climate, that's still there. But most of the other pollutants that we've had historically, the stuff that causes smog and ozone and that kind of thing, that's been dramatically reduced. Really, really dramatically reduced. And, you know, that's why that Manhattan Institute study, it's interesting. They found, you know, if you assume that electric vehicles are just sort of powered by grid power, sort of the typical energy mix that we have in this country, that's actually worse for pollution than an internal combustion engine, because we still have a lot of coal in our energy mix. And so what's coming out of the smokestack is actually worse than what's coming out of the tailpipe.
Fascinating. And you also point out, Phil, you say the Green New Deal is a socialist income leveling exercise in the guise of environmental policy. Electric vehicle subsidies use environmental delusion as a cover for a wealth transfer from poor and middle-income Americans to the rich who buy electric hobby cars for their third or fourth vehicle.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the reverse. I mean, the Green New Deal, they're like, okay, we got to have the government take over everything in energy, massive spending program, but, you know, we're going to guarantee income to people who are unable or unwilling to work in this whole sort of socialist scheme to redistribute wealth. You know, at least they're taking from the rich and giving to the poor. Now, I'm not in favor of that because I believe in free markets, but at least, you know, there's that rationale behind it. This is the opposite. This is taking from the poor and the middle class and giving to the rich, because the people who claim this tax break are high-income people. And the Democrats are always saying tax breaks for the rich are terrible, tax breaks for the rich are terrible. Then they push this electric vehicle tax break, where the most recent IRS data we have shows that 1% of the people who claim it make less than $50,000, 50% of the people who claim it make more than $200,000, and 80% make more than $100,000. So you got like 19% between 50 and 100, and then you got everyone else is making more than that. But basically, this is middle and lower income people that are subsidizing through the tax code, through, you know, this hole being punched in the tax code, the upper middle class and the rich. And, you know, the liberals are always telling us they hate that, but you put a little bit of an environmental rationale on it and suddenly they love it.
And as you point out here, that's a cost of over $50 a year to middle income Americans to pay for subsidies for rich people in California.
Yeah, mostly California. That's the other aspect of this, is half of all electric vehicle sales in the country are in one state, the state of California. And so there's also sort of, you know, the fairness question of, how's that right? That, you know, it's not only is it upper income people, but they're in one state, you know, half of them in the whole country are in one state.
I think one of the things that surprised me most in your recent op-ed, Phil Kirpin, is that Orrin Hatch was the original sponsor of this subsidy.
Yeah, he was, and
because he's a Republican from Utah, Orrin Hatch.
Yeah, and President Bush signed it. It was 07, so I mean, this is pre-Obama when this started. This was President Bush signed it, and you know, Orrin Hatch was the sponsor. And frankly, they really, I think, believed in this national security argument that we were too dependent on foreign oil, and that we were at risk of potential supply disruptions, and that we could reduce that exposure by subsidizing electric vehicles. But if you look at what Orrin Hatch said in that block quote that I have there, I mean, he also was very clear that this was intended to be temporary, to give them a lift, sort of get them over the hump to be commercially available, and then it would phase out and they would sink or swim based on consumer preference. And, you know, we're now at that point where they've sold over 200,000, the two biggest manufacturers have. And, you know, I think they could sink or swim on consumer preference. They're pretty nice cars. People like them, okay? You want to buy it, that's fine. But use your money. You don't need to get a special tax break in order to buy them. And as we were just saying also, you know, that rationale, you know, it's interesting. You never know where the world is going. They were so convinced that this oil dependency was such a huge issue that we need to have a big government program for even, you know, Republicans who generally are against that kind of thing thought that was important for national security reasons. And here we are a little over a decade later. Not only are we a net oil exporter, there have been some weeks we've been the world's biggest oil exporter. We actually had a couple of weeks where we exported more than Saudi Arabia. That's incredible. And it means that, you know, they really didn't see the direction that oil markets were going in back then.
Well, as always, I appreciate your thoughts, my man, and keep up the good fight for free markets and freedom. Phil Kirpin is on Twitter, @Kirpin, and I wish you and the Mets all the best.
All right, thanks, buddy.
All right, we'll talk to you again, Phil.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.